This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios, in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
It is. A podcast of mixed emotion.
Because
summer is coming, David.
It is. Yeah, but it's going to be a summer of football,
blues.
Though, Rog. It's going to be a summer of football.
It is. I mean, that's the thing I take solace. It's not just going to be a summer of football.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a stealth monster summer.
Yeah.
For football in America, and I can't believe that more people are not talking about it. I look out, Davo.
Yeah.
Onto Soho. We're looking down
into the crap part of Soho.
I can glimpse West Broadway afar. There should be people walking up and down that street, just murmuring, "Copa." Copa, Euro 2016.
Euro 2000 and Copa.
Yeah.
Rog, and then the ICC following up right afterwards.
Yeah, coming down the rear.
Yeah.
Out flanking, and then the Olympics.
Oh.
Women, gold.
Yeah.
I mean, is it? It's not a World Cup year.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. We've been blessed with two on the run, the women's and the lesser men's event the year before. But it is to have a Copa in the Euro. Think about this. The Copa, yes, it's a fake Copa. But it's a fake Copa that's all ours. It's on our shores.
Yeah.
There's going to be a circus for American fans rolling into town. Messi, Alexis Sanchez, Steve Birnbaum.
Yeah.
Playing for the greats, Davo.
Yeah.
Playing for their national teams in our stadia. And the reinforcing effect of the Euros playing on the office TVs in the afternoon, in the bar screens during the day. That 1-2 Euro Copa punch. It's going to feel like an ersatz World Cup, Davo, a dietetic chocolate World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
But you love dietetic chocolate.
I love dietetic chocolate. But, Roger, remember last year you and I were saying to each other, I'm not sure that we ever said it on the podcast, we certainly said it privately, that we didn't feel a lot of heat about the Women's World Cup. We weren't hearing a lot of noise. We didn't feel that it was really out there
in the
public consciousness.
Yeah, it didn't cross over.
And then it kicked off, and it kicked off.
It's like a tsunami. Rog.
So I feel like soccer... It needs to start happening for people to start getting excited about it. That it doesn't really start happening before it happens is what I'm saying.
I like your thesis because I'm feeling a bit sad that our Premier League friends just about to evaporate.
Yeah.
Talking about friends, I was in Austin this weekend. For the American Outlaws conference.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's the thing. It's just when Rog's talking about friends. It's a very short podcast.
I said that for my other podcast.
Yeah.
Today in Self-Loathing.
Austin, Texas. Yeah, Austin.
David.
We both love Austin, Texas.
Oh, what a city.
Yeah.
What a quality of life.
Yeah.
What a history.
Mm-hmm.
Seeping through that land. Do you know, every person I met kept telling me how many people a day are moving to Austin.
Uh-huh.
First person said 140.
Yeah.
Second one said 150. It kept going out with every conversation. 200 people a day.
Yeah.
Someone told me a movie into that city.
Yeah.
To Texas.
Yeah.
State of mind that, to me, is very intriguing. Bit of confidence through place.
Yeah. My very smart eldest daughter, Bria, lives there, as you well know.
I do.
Loves, has a very high quality of life.
Loves it
down there in Austin, Texas.
Just immersing herself in barbecue.
Yeah.
The taste of freedom and democracy.
Yeah, I don't think that's really her.
What?
I don't think it's barbecue.
What's she got against democracy?
No, she loves democracy.
Yeah.
She loves
is she pro-freedom?
No, she's mainly pro-Bernie.
I spent some time with the American Outlaws.
Yeah.
Just a fascinating group of characters.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember what it was like when the US qualified for World Cup 1990? 1989, beating Trinidad and Tobago 1-0. And they qualified. There's a great Bob Lee clip on YouTube if you've not seen it. I think he almost has to apologise before he starts talking about it. And now for football of a very different kind, I think he says, than the one you're used to. He's always embarrassed. Anyway, in that clip, I just remember they score the US and the cameras pan up to the US fans in the stadium. There's about a dozen of them.
Yeah, well, I remember this in Los Angeles, early 90s, going to see the US team. I remember seeing them play Mexico at the Coliseum. And there was just no US fan representation whatsoever. Or if they were there, they were so terrified by being so severely outnumbered by the Mexican fans that they barely made any noise or barely identified themselves. It has changed so much, since the advent of the Outlaws, Roger.
Yeah, I mean, their passion, their commitment, their creativity. And I was thinking, while I was with them, for the US team, the players will shuffle in and out The coaches, Jill Ellis, Jurgen, they'll come and they'll go. The fans, ultimately, they're the one. They're the one constant, David.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yeah, fantastic work. So you had a good time down there, Rog?
Oh, I loved it. I really did. I could live in Austin, Texas.
Really, where would you live? Take me through your life. What would your life be like in Austin, Texas?
I'd have a couch.
Not a ranch.
And a television.
Yeah.
I'd watch a lot of football.
Yeah.
I'd drink Guinness.
How different would that be from your life in New York? It'd be warmer in the winter. But you love winter. You love the cold weather.
I know. I'm not moving.
Yeah,
like
you love the winter and you love
give
rain.
Give me cardigans or
you
give me
cardigans.
Death.
You love cardigans. You love cardigans. Okay, Rog, we've got a packed show. We're going to relive
really packed
every last second of emotion, ebullience, and Bocelli from Leicester City's Cita di Leicester, your Premier League trophy presentation. We're going to check in with longtime GFOP and the man who inspired Moneyball, Billy Beane.
Hello, friend.
To hear what he sees when he watches Leicester's title-winning roster assembled on a budget. Interesting take. We also have a remarkable raven from a GFOP who has just bought an English football team, Rog. All that, and we scurry through the top four and relegation loose ends at the pace of Duncan Watmore, but a little less gingery.
Oh, by the way, the GFOP brought the football team.
Yeah.
I'll just give you a clue. It's not the Glazers.
Yeah, not huge GFOPs, the Glazers. Okay, Rog, to the football. Yep. Crack open the Guinness, Rog. Excellently done. Well poured again.
To Bocelli.
Yes,
to and Bocelli. Leicester City. And when Everton win the title next year,
yeah,
I'm going to get Jay Giles and his band to come and sing at Goodison. It's going to be amazing.
An early prediction of an Everton Premier
Jay
League
Giles band.
Premier League victory. Interesting. Okay, Rog, we are now between 36 and 37, 38 of the way through the Premier League season. At time of podding, Manchester United have not yet kicked off against West Ham, and the scriptwriters delivered a denouement, Roger, complete with operatic soundtrack as Leicester City lift the Premier League trophy in front of a raucous. They lift Leicester City, Rog. Leicester. Remember Leicester?
Pinch
Leicester
me.
City, Rog. They lift the Premier League trophy in front of a raucous King Power stadium.
Tiny, innocuous town.
Uh-huh.
A collective waking dream.
Mm-hmm.
One that sustained itself beyond all belief and all predictions.
Yeah.
To the contrary.
Yep.
The day was less a game of football.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like watching an ancient pilgrimage from the time of King David.
Uh-huh.
I mean, where you hear about thousands of adherents flocking to the temple.
Yep.
Took them days to get there. They walked there from their villages. I mean, that's what it looked like pre-game. 5 hours before kickoff, thousands and thousands descended upon the King Power as if it was the temple in Jerusalem. Not only English fans, but there were hundreds of Italians who just wanted to pay their respects to Ranieri, to pay witness and party. What a bandwagon has grown behind this team, David. We were here when we were sang the disbelieving Leicester faithful. Amazing stat from FIFA. 36 million Leicester games were played on FIFA 15 last year. There's been 134 million played already on FIFA 16. That's a 269% uptick. Perhaps the best indicator of their global popularity surge, David. But another one was the arrival of Andrea Bocelli on the scene.
Yeah, Andrea Bocelli.
Of course Bocelli would be there.
One thing about all these Italians, Roger, is an amazing confluence also of the colour blue and that dark blue, that azure dark blue, which makes this with Ranieri and that dark blue makes it even more Italian. Cita di Leicester, Rogelio.
It is. The cultured Ranieri, whose friend is Bocelli, watching the two of them, Davo, walk out onto that field in perhaps the most Italian moment of all time, not involving Andrea Pirlo.
Yeah.
It made me want to just pause the television, go and make love to a pizza.
Yeah, or you could have a little Brunello del Montalcino, Rog, instead.
They walked past the Premier League trophy. They went to that little stage in the centre. It was also wonderfully surreal. It's a man who sang to the Queen on her 90th birthday. Mm-hmm. He serenaded the Pope.
Yeah.
Sung lullabies to Elmo.
Yeah.
And here he was, at bloody Leicester,
mm-hmm.
on the day that they received the trophy. To put that into context, we said this on the show for Americans. It's like one of your royals. Like Barry Manilow, or maybe Diamond, maybe Streisand,
yeah,
travelling to Cleveland,
mm-hmm,
to just bellow Copacabana, possibly the happiest music with deeply sad lyrics of all time at First Energy Stadium before the Browns receive the Vince Lombardi trophy.
I mean, to put it in context, Roger, as I said last week, Leicester, my safety school, applied there, could easily have ended up there, never bothered to visit the city or the university
before
I went there.
And now thousands of Americans are travelling there. Thousands of, apparently, speaking to people who work at Leicester City, Americans are flocking
to Leicester.
To that city.
They're flying into Leicester International Airport.
And it's international because it has flights to Birmingham. At Stage C11,
yeah,
mock all you want, but Leicester City has given us Browns fans more hope than the Cleveland Browns themselves have in the last 20 years. And then Davo Bocelli opened his mouth.
Yeah.
Nessun Dorma.
Yeah.
Vincenzo. Can you do it for me? You do it. Be on much nicer voice.
Not really. I can't do it. I do it along with you.
Vincenzo. Which means, Davo.
Yeah.
I will win.
Yeah, well, they did.
Yeah, and he revealed he was wearing a Leicester City jersey.
Yeah.
Had to rub my eyes to make sure it was all real while I was watching. I mean, what do you think Ranieri felt as he stood by his mate with the millions, nay, billions watching on television? He's standing in Leicester at the King Power. I mean, the home of doom and half-hearted, flatulent football in a yo-yo club that is just an absolute walk-on. I mean, just a complete cameo role it's played in Premier League history. And this is a man himself whose career as a journeyman was kind of doomed and tinged by past and present failures. How must he have felt, Davo, in his innards? What feelings must have flowed through those noble, proud veins?
One thing I love about him is how composed he has been throughout this entire thing. He looks like he was expecting this to happen. And that, for me, has been ultimately so impressive.
Oh, I can only imagine that it was a sense of accomplishment, relief, glory, shock, justification, endeavour, and sheer happiness. I mean, an nth of which I wish upon you and our dear listeners, each of you. May we all enjoy ourselves for at least a moment, like Ranieri did on that field. He was asked to explain how he did what he did. I mean, I think there is an incredible sense of shock because he's not able to communicate anything other than kind of gnomic wisdom. And he does so wonderfully. He said, "The fans, they were dreaming. I came along and said, dilly ding, dilly dong," his trademark catchphrase. "They woke up and the dream was a reality." I'm sure thousands of leaders in corporations across the country are going to take that patented method and turn their organizations around. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a succinct summary for the past 10 months. It's probably about as rational an explanation as I've heard thus far. But I imagine that it reminds me when we had Howard Jacobson on the pod a couple of months ago, a guy who won a massive book award very late in his career. And he talked about how shocking it felt, how joyous it felt, how noble it felt for coming so late. And he said the main feeling he felt, and I've thought a lot about it in the context of Ranieri, he felt that he realised now his career would never be forgotten and that his name would always be immortal. And I'm sure Ranieri is feeling that, and I think it's fantastic because it's so richly deserved.
Yeah, without a doubt. And there's something about him certainly being an older manager, a more experienced manager, that led him to manage this group of players in that way, that even at the point that they sort of went ahead in the Premier League, he didn't change anything. He didn't get anxious. He didn't get desperate. He allowed them to have the freedom, allowed them to party, allowed them to eat what they want, allowed them to train less than almost every other Premier League team, and kept the team spirit really high.
And the big question post-Bocelli was, would Leicester still have the focus to play football? Or after 5 days living at the pub on all-night bender scene from Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels? I mean, I just pictured the whole squad passed out every night at a bar, 5 a.m. Jamie Vardy and Vasilevsky, the last two standing. Well, not standing, they're probably sitting across a table, matching each other shot for shot of aftershave, having drunk the bar dry. I mean, would they, in that context, be able to even play football?
Yeah, well, they certainly did, Rod. You have said, I wouldn't be as unkind to say it, that one thing that really helped them was they're playing Everton, Roger. But they beat them 3-1, two goals from who else? Jamie Vardy, and another from Andy King, who looks a lot like Jamie Vardy to me. They saw the Foxes close out their home campaign in style, Rog. Nothing seems to have changed about the joy with which they played football.
1-0 inside 6 minutes.
Yep.
cue scenes of stadium-wide delirium. Mm-hmm. Watching it, I began to wonder, Dave, what impact the actions of this squad of men on a sports field would have on the wider mental health of the entire area for a prolonged period. I mean, such is the collective communal ebullience. You look at these Leicester City fans and the meaning, the memories, the reasons for hope, the optimism, the waves of joy rocking over the stadium and love, David.
Mum, I'm going to be the greatest optician in England. You're hearing kids all over Leicester. They have massive dreams now.
Yeah, my local butcher shop. We're going to sell more ham hocks next quarter than we've ever sold
before. International. I love it. I love it.
Oh, I mean, there's not much point talking about the game. Everton were very Washington Generals. Yeah. I'd like to say it was just for this game. But really, since the Bournemouth comeback in November.
Oh, was that the killer?
Yeah. Up till then, I was chatting to J-Dubs.
Yeah.
We had...
Producer J-Dubs.
Alan Pardew come on the podcast.
Yeah.
And Alan Pardew mentioned that he was chatting to Roberto Martinez and both of them eyed a top four finish. It could be real. It could be real.
So it's when they started celebrating too early, it doomed them, Rog. Oh,
Andy King, second goal, lesser goal, more a poetic reminder of the magnificent improbability of the Leicester story. Mm-hmm. On the day he received the Premier League medal, he could put it alongside the one he received for winning League One and the Championship with the old Leicester.
Yeah.
Do you remember them? The old, crappy
ones.
Leicester. And there was little suspense left. The only pleasure, Arlo White dropping casually the Vishai Srivadantharapaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparaparapara
And his son, Top.
And his son, Top.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. He said it the way Ollie said it so proudly.
Top.
I also know his son's name.
And it's Top.
It's Top.
And it seems to have more than one P. Top.
And then watching Jamie Vardy take a penalty and taunt poor Joel, the last Robles. Everton player to still give a crap.
Wow.
Jamie Vardy, he's taking the piss, bellowed the crowd. Incidentally, I found the stream of Jamie Vardy stories that have been flooding out of Leicester this week to be fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Why does Jamie Vardy wear a cast on his hand, you may ask?
Wow.
Said the Leicester Mercury in an exclusive.
Did he get into a fight?
Yes, he did.
He did?
Yeah, on a club day out in Blackpool.
Uh-huh.
How would you describe Blackpool?
It's Atlantic City, but 100 times crapper.
Yeah, it's like Reno, Nevada, but seedier.
Yeah, and by the beach, but not a beach you want to go to.
He was in one
good
of the
golf courses nearby.
Yes, there are.
Yeah.
It's in one of, that's on our other pod.
Yeah, Davo talks about great golf courses.
Oh, Vardy finds himself in one of the town's many arcades.
Yeah.
And he just decides, as you would, I'm going to punch the punching machine really hard.
Yeah.
And he did in his
full... Try and break it.
In his full blood... Yeah, I'm going to break it. I'm going to
break it.
I'm going to break it.
I'm going to break the punching machine.
Vardy's going to punch it.
Vardy's going to party and break the punching machine.
Excuse me, Mr. Punching Machine. Did you happen to have just chatted And he smashed the backboard, thus breaking a bone in his right hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great story.
But look,
another Jamie Vardy story.
Okay, go ahead.
Jamie Vardy. This one was sent out by the chairman now, whose name I can't repeat because I'm not Arlo White.
Yeah. Top's dad.
Briefly. Top's dad. Top's dad said, Jamie Vardy used to show up drunk to Leicester training.
Yeah.
And I began to think, Davo, are they just releasing now information to make the backstory scenes better for Hollywood's purposes in the movie?
Or worse.
Do you think they've got an intern in Leicester's kind of communication department just watching great movies? He's watching Kevin Costner's Crash Davis drunk in Bull Durham.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, yeah, we could have that for Vardy. Mm-hmm. Vardy's a drunk.
Yeah.
I can't wait till that intern watches The Crying Game and Taxi Driver.
Look, let's face it. Jamie Vardy does not seem to be someone imbued with much charm. I think we may have used the words loathsome individual at some point to describe his character.
Of the character of the top-selling jersey in the English Premier
but
League.
He is a fantastic footballer, and I would posit, Roger, that the qualities that make him a somewhat loathsome individual are the same qualities that make him such a successful soccer player, with everybody's weaknesses are also their strengths. And it's that competitive fire, that competitive urge, that same urge that makes him taunt Joe Robles unnecessarily after putting the third goal past on that particular day, Rog hapless Everton Football Club,
who'd face
the penalty
a
spot.
Keeper that had faced 33 shots, highest total against any opponent all season.
But it's that same quality that makes him the guy that could get out of playing non-league football from the Stockbridge Steels and sort of make it all the way through and believe in himself and get through. He's a competitive arse.
He's English, Rog. Jennifer Beals in Flashdance.
I don't know what the correct analogy is, probably that one.
If Jennifer Beals in Flashdance and a large rat
does a lot of taunting.
Had a bastard offspring, you got yourselves Jay Vardy.
Yeah.
Oh, Everton. Confidence of prisoners forced to fight lions for a baying crowd in the Colosseum. Mm-hmm. I'll say, this game as an Everton fan, I've been numb for much of the second half of the season. I actually found this incredibly painful to watch.
Yeah.
I lived out a season of frustration over the course of 90 minutes. One sad performance after another from the squad. Because we were watching Leicester. Should have been us. Should have been us. Which I think a lot of fans are going to feel in the off-season. Vardy did ultimately miss a second penalty. Leicester starting to lose it. That may be when historians mark the great turning of the Leicester City story. But what struck me was when Everton did score, beautiful late strike, great run by Kevin Morales that was as wonderful as it was irrelevant. Kasper Schmeichel about to win a long dreamt of but never truly thought possible league title. He was disgusted at himself.
Yep.
And he threw himself on the floor and he stayed disgusted even at the final whistle. That, to me, was the intensity and focus of champions truly laid bare. And then the trophy paraded on, Davo, as the Leicester fans sang, Barcelona, we're coming for you. I think I was a bit more moved by the trophy presentation than you were. You're down on trophy presentations.
Oh, I feel like the Premier League has got to do some work on their trophy presentations. I feel like this year particularly it was highlighted because it's exactly the same trophy presentation that we've seen every single year. This year it got a lot more camera coverage. There are a lot more photographers there and it got a lot more time on NBC than it seems to have got.
What
on
do you
the
want?
Past.
You want it to be dropped in by drone?
No, I just want it to have a build-up. I want it to really sort of like happen. It just always feels so unrehearsed. It just feels like nobody's really thought about what would be a really entertaining way, what would be a great way to really honour these champions.
You want it choreographed.
I would certainly like a
footballers
highlight.
Learn more than that jumping up and down dance with the arms going up and down either side.
I'd quite like a video highlight film leading into it, Rog. I'd like to give a tribute to that overall season.
And in memoriam too.
Yes, if you want one of those. I know you like those.
Images of Brendan Rodgers and Steve McLaren and those we've lost.
Yeah, I think the pyrotechnics look tired. They were fancy in 2007. They don't seem so exciting now.
Yeah, fire cannons.
Yeah.
Bit crap.
And let's do an RAF flyover. Yes, we've only got biplanes. We haven't yet invented the gun that fires through the propeller.
We couldn't be quite a slow one. But I think Beyonce's available.
But I'd like a bit more ceremony around the Premier League trophy.
You see, for me, Dave, it was the same in form as last season.
Yeah, but it was more emotionally laden, I know.
It was. I mean, there's just all the meaning was born by the fact that it was the same Premier League trophy. Yeah. It was bloody Leicester City who were about to receive it. A combination really as unlikely as Julia Roberts and Lyle Lovett, David. Fantastic moment. Watching Manchester United's goalkeeping legend, Peter Schmeichel, hold his grandson, Max, so that Max could see his dad, Kasper, lift up the Premier League trophy. Three possible generations of greatness. Or Max might just start a hedge fund. Who knows? Or maybe get into that butcher shop, which will be global by then.
Nothing
unless
wrong with either of those
but
choices.
God, there was a real emotional power we were witnessing, Davo. Because to me, when they lifted that trophy, it's a reminder. And football's fans' memories can be incredibly short-term. We look at football really through a two-week window, a three-week window. But it's a reminder that this team, these men, this organisation have over the past 10 months, 37 games, they performed nothing short of a modern-day miracle. And I believe that deeply. I really mean that. It's been an act that's made me plumb the depths of human endeavour and what's truly possible for all of us. At Moped Javi tweeted, my wife's reaction to my tears as Leicester City lifted the trophy. She turned around and just said, seriously? Which I love. At Syracuse Toffees, I love the Leicester story so much. I want them relegated to League One over the next two seasons so we can relive it all over again. What are the odds of that?
Well, there are probably odds on that.
I think the odds are 50-1 for them to get relegated next season, 25-1 to win again. Mm. Leicester City, other Premier League title winners will be more stylish, no doubt. And there'll definitely be more competitive Premier League campaigns than the one that we've seen. But none will be more universally beloved. Don't know if you've got any last words, Dave, but if you haven't, we should leave them to Arlo White.
Yeah, go ahead, Rog.
Who chose at the last to coronate his beloved Leicester by unfurling the commentator's forbidden word. The closest we may ever come to watching Arlo do the Lambada, the forbidden dance.
Well, some might say that these scenes are unbelievable.
I think the last thing I'd say, and it's not so much about Leicester, it's more about the legacy and what's going to happen for the Premier League. Is this going to usher in a new era of competition, more competition in what is already the most competitive major league in Europe? Or is this just a one-off? Was this just a freak of various factors coming together at exactly the right time that have resulted in this wondrous, wondrous season?
A great question, David. And to understand it in a way that is more subtle than you and I are ever able to delve, I thought we'd ring up one of our true friends of the pod and get a little deeper into this Leicester Moneyball phenomenon.
The Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations for the Oakland Athletics, our old friend, Mr. Billy Bean.
Hello.
Billy Bean.
Hey, Rog, how you been?
Oh, good now, Billy. Now you're in our loving arms.
Nothing compared to a Klopp cuddle, which you received recently.
Oh, you've got to institute that as a club policy in Oakland.
Just the visual itself was worth it.
What a season it's been, Billy. I mean, the kind that you dream of in Major League Baseball. I mean, when you look at the Leicester City title win, when you look at it in the singular, Billy, do you see a miracle? Or do you see the fingerprints of Moneyball all over it?
I think certainly in my life, it's probably the most surprising accomplishment I can think of. Closest I can think of and remember in my own lifetime was Buster Douglas beating Mike Tyson. But even if you look at that, that was sort of a one match and you're out. And this is over a 38-game season, which makes it that much more remarkable. And ultimately, you have to say at the end, they were the best team.
What are the elements of the story that you look at when you've watched Leicester City that stand out for you as a GM? What questions do you have about recruitment changes that they've made that other teams haven't, about the style of play that they've been able to find that's different to other teams?
More than anything, it just shows the amount of talent in that sport and that there are probably a lot of guys out there, if given the opportunity, could succeed at that level. Another thing, too, they stay healthy. When you're able to keep your best players on the pitch or on the field in any sport, there's a huge advantage. But I think more than anything, and you could hear the narrative of the season went on, you know, the assumption was that they certainly weren't going to stay up there. But I think everybody by the end of it pretty much acknowledged they were the deserved champions, and it was not a fluke.
You know, the word you hear a lot about Leicester City also is chemistry. And sometimes the word joy, that they played football with joy. They loved playing with each other. How do you measure that? How important is that? And is that something which you can ever actually deliberately put together? Or is it only something that can happen by accident?
I don't think it's by accident, but I do think that it's a result. Listen, it's just like any business or anywhere you are, when things are going well, particularly in a sports locker room where, you know, it's a very intense atmosphere. You know, you're literally dressing next to your teammates every single day of the year. And when things are going good, people are enjoying themselves, and that sort of creates that environment. I mean, the idea that you can sort of quantify it and maybe select players based on that ability to get along, I certainly don't know it, but I know here in Oakland we've had a lot of teams. But the one thing and one common denominator, if we won games and we went to the playoffs, we usually had great chemistry. So I've always seen it as a byproduct of putting a successful product on the field.
So Jamie Vardy, have you ever seen in your career in baseball a player come from such humble minor league background and explode so massively on the major stage, in the bigs, in the show?
I really can't, probably particularly at that age. And when you consider, well, first of all, you know, his speed is so unique, which seems to set him apart, but to do it at that age, and the idea that it wasn't sort of recognized earlier on in his career, I mean, the closest thing I can think of, and I certainly wasn't around when it happened, was you think of a guy like Satchel Paige, who had been a very successful Negro Leagues pitcher and then came to the Major Leagues at a very advanced age and, you know, went on to be a dominant pitcher during his era.
Big debate now about Riyad Mahrez, just 25, 17 goals and 11 assists so far this season. Leicester have announced he's 99% sure to be staying. His agent says, it's more 50-50. Arsenal rumoured to be sniffing around both him and N'Golo Kante. If you were GM, Billy Bean, if you're GM at Leicester, do you cash in on a couple of those players while their value is at its peak?
We face that question all the time, the sort of balance. And, you know, the one thing I'm sure, given where that club has come from, they want to sustain success, and they certainly have the benefit of more revenues coming in, but they're also probably never going to be a club that's going to be able to beat the top four. But the great thing about the new TV deal, it does allow some of these mid-table clubs and even some of the lower-table clubs to hold on to players. From a business standpoint, it's a very difficult decision to make. At some point, clubs that size, just like clubs our size, you ultimately need to regenerate. The best way of doing that in the Premier League is by, you know, transferring players and getting more revenues to spend on younger players. But it is the $64,000 question, and when's the right time is not always easy to determine.
Ranieri's meant to be coming in for Nick Swisher and Jeremy Bonderman.
Is this something that we're going to see more of, or is this just a confluence of unique one-time events? Ranieri comes in and just gets this together in exactly the right season when some of the bigger teams are dipping. Is this a one-off? Is this something that we're going to see again? Tell us, Billy.
Having the most money is always going to give you the biggest advantage in any sport, in any business. But I think you'll see these type of clubs start to push. And you've seen it in baseball a little bit. You know, we have our sort of TV deal. We have revenue sharing. And you've seen more small market clubs consistently perform and challenge. And then certainly in the case of Kansas City last year, you know, again, lost in Leicester City's success is how solid a club like Southampton has become. Certainly they weren't challenging for the title, but it was probably still the last team you wanted to play the last weekend of the season, or during the last week of the season if you needed to win. And you've seen a steady climb by that club each year, and it seems to be on more and more solid ground each year. And so I think you're going to start to see, you know, teams starting to push those teams more consistently. And then ultimately, another one will probably crack through. A lot of it is just the ability to retain some of your players, you know, because of the revenues from the new TV deal. They may be a seller at some point, but it's not necessarily right after a player has great success.
Talking about smaller clubs, Billy, couple of quick musings. Indulge us. I know you're fond of Arsenal in general, Arsene Wenger in particular. But if you were running Arsenal and not the A's, would you see a fatigue manager in need of a refresh?
You know, I'm always going to be the Arsenal apologist. I look at it from a different viewpoint. And the tough thing for a guy who's accomplished so much like Wenger is that, and I think it was, you know, one of my old managers here in Oakland, Tony La Russa, said, I think Dusty Baker might have said it when he was with the Giants, that, you know, they sort of felt like after being somewhere for 10 years that, you know, they had to move on. And in Wenger's case, I think he's been so successful for such a long time that at a certain point, people stop forgetting what he has done and really focus on what he hasn't, which is a little bit unfair because if you really look at the last 10 years, the one club, I believe, literally the one club that has had a chance to win it every year in the last decade has been Arsenal. You can't say that about Manchester United. You couldn't say it about Chelsea this year. And in some respect, he's almost a victim of his consistent success. And it's a little bit like running the Yankees. You know, Brian Cashman's a very close friend of mine, and we've been doing the job the same amount of time. But literally the only day he actually gets to enjoy the job is when they actually win the World Series. And even then, it's more of a relief because the expectation is so high that anything accomplished below that is not really recognized and appreciated.
The legendary Italian coach Trapattoni once said, a good manager makes a team 10% better, bad manager makes it 30% worse. I've got to ask you about Jurgen Klopp. Short time he's been at Liverpool, but he seems to be making the club twice what they were. When you look at him, how do you understand what he's done? Because it all seems to be about fusing fans, players and passion.
The game that I think probably represents what was the Dortmund Europa match when they were down and they came back, and which was an amazing match, is that it's not always good in those positions to wear your sort of emotions on your sleeves, but he seems to do it, and it really works. I mean, you know when he's upset, you know when he's happy, it's infectious. And a little bit in a different way than Mourinho, he really takes a lot of the pressure off the player by, you know, by his own cult of personality. It's much different than Mourinho, the way Mourinho does it. But in a sense, the way he is really allows the focus to be on him, and I think takes a lot of pressure off the player. The fact of the matter is he looks like a lot of fun to be around. And I don't think you can underestimate that in any sport, that the players genuinely like him, but they also respect him, which is a fine line to walk when you're a manager of any sports team. He seems to really hit that perfect tone.
Got to ask you the burning question everyone in football is asking, Billy. How is Brendan Rodgers doing? And by Brendan Rodgers, I mean the Rockies' number one prospect, Brendan Rodgers, who's hitting 364 for single A Asheville, reached base safely on 22 of his last 23 games. What's your read on Brendan?
Gets on base.
Yeah, I assure you, that young Brendan Rodgers, you're talking about prospect for the Rockies, you will hear more about him. He's a very, very talented kid. So, yes, that may end up be dueling for the most famous Brendan Rodgers here in the next year or so.
I love sausage fingers, David. Billy, we are honored to have you. We are grateful to you.
No, it's great to speak to you guys. It's been far too long.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Thanks, Billy.
All right, see you guys.
Okay, Rog, this just in. There was other football that went on this past weekend.
But none of it packed that emotional punch. And I'll be honest, David, all of it felt much lesser because of it. Every game was lived in the shadow.
I hope that's not what we're going to say about the Premier League next year, Rog.
We just have to get Bocelli to sing before every game.
Every game. I spent a lot of time in England. Okay, Rog, Spurs.
I feel like Phil Collins at Live Aid, just jetting around in the Concorde, playing both ends.
Yeah, we've got to power up the Concorde. We've got to get one of those working again. Spurs 1, Southampton 2, Tottenham stumble, Rog, in their final game of the season at White Hart Lane. It's making me sad. After taking the lead behind a circuitous 16th minute sun goal.
He perambulated rather than ran. He promenaded.
Spurs conceded two soft ones to Stephen Davis. Well written, J-Dubs. Spurs stay second, but have left the door open for Arsenal, Rog. Arsenal to pip them on the final day of the season. Arsenal.
A bridge too far, David. Great movie.
Yeah, I love that movie.
It's what this game was like.
I love that.
An emotionally exhausted, ground down Leicester, psychologically, physically shattered by their doom chase of Magic's Leicester City. Spurs, you came closer than Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
Just take some solace from that, even though it's not very close at all.
Yeah.
It snowed in London last weekend. But on Sunday,
it's 72 degrees or something.
It was 80 degrees.
Wow, no.
Which is English hot. That is English unbelievably
hot. That
is
English heatwave.
Yeah, my God. So a water break was deemed necessary. And it wasn't just the heat that took their toll on poor Spurs. I mean, the ground was quiet. The place was shell-shocked before kickoff. A title pursuit shattered. Dele Alli and Dembele out for their assorted random acts of violence. They just couldn't get up for it, David. For the arrival of Southampton, a team who hadn't won at White Hart Lane for 13 long years.
Yeah, Tottenham paying the price, Rog, for their indiscipline in what was, for me, one of the games of the season, Chelsea hosting Tottenham last week. But now, as you said, without Dembele, without Dele Alli for his earlier crimes committed against West Bromwich Albion, and even when they took the lead behind that amazing circuitous goal from Son, they just didn't look like the same team.
Yeah, I mean, for the third week on the run, they took a lead only to relinquish it before a stunned, mentally fatigued, emotionally frazzled into silence, White Hart Lane. Stephen Davis, a pair of goals, really, defensive mishaps. No defenders had the ability, the energy, whatever it was, to close him down.
That's what Davises do. That's how we roll, Rog.
You Davises never tire.
Yeah,
that's the motto.
We have our invisibility cloaks, Rog.
It's sad to see the sense of loss that's taking grip with the Tottenham side. Because, I mean, I understand emotionally from a we-almost-had-it-all perspective.
Yeah.
Rationally, it's been an unbelievable season for Tottenham Hotspur.
It's fantastic. They've played beautiful football.
As an Everton fan, I can only look at and covet.
Yeah.
But you could say Spurs fans would have leapt at the idea of second place before the season kicked off, but it just can't mitigate the emotional savagery of going 1-0 up against West Brom, 2-0 up on Chelsea, and scoring first against Southampton, only to drop 7 points over the course of 3 games, which would have placed them just 3 behind Leicester going into the final weekend.
Oh, we would have had a big final weekend, Rog.
And I guess the memory of 20 points dropped from winning positions all season, the most in the league, statistic which will cause any fan post-traumatic stress, the kind that can last for a generation.
Yeah.
I mean, where are we with Spurs, David? You're in the Champions League. You sign a new striker in the off-season. Radiohead have released a moon-shaped pool as a soundtrack for your sad nap. But can a young team learn to lock down Leeds next season?
Well, look, I think they are front to back the most balanced team in the Premier League. And they've got a bench too. They do have a pretty good squad, and they've got a fantastic, fantastic, exciting, competitive, European experienced manager in Pochettino, Rog. I feel very good about Tottenham going forward. I actually feel certainly, you know, compared to all the other London clubs, and probably, you know, we're still, you know, where it's going to be time over the next few weeks for us to look forward and predict what's going to happen in the Premier League next season. I predicted them fourth this season. I think they're going to do better than that. I think the sky's the limit for this team. It's just the mental side of the game. Ultimately, that's what happens. They are going to end up this season with almost certainly the best goal difference in the Premier League. Rog, there's no reason why the team with the best goal difference didn't end up winning it. And it would be mental, ultimately.
That's what Pochettino talked about post-game. We need to be more aggressive, kill games, but we're young and proud of our players. We need to be critical with ourselves if we're to improve next season. I mean, as I began to tell myself, and I think I might get this tattooed on my inner wrist, Lindsay Lohan Breeze style. It could be worse, Spurs fans. You could be Dothraki.
Yeah,
I keep saying to myself in my everyday life. A quick word on Southampton, Davo. 60 points.
Yeah.
Most in a Premier League campaign for them ever. Phenomenal 2016. Only Leicester have won more points this year than Southampton. They've beaten United, Liverpool, City, and now Spurs. Another team that have separated themselves from the pack by finding competitive edges in every dimension. Youth development, scouting. When I was there, the laundryman showed me the washing powder they were experimenting with so that the level of aeration and wind resistance can give them a competitive advantage on the field. On such small margins, a great Premier League season's made.
Yeah, and look, and that would have been an even better season, except for a few lulls. If you look at the pattern of their season, wins, draws and losses, they just, the yellow and red for the draws and losses, they happen in a two or three little patches where they couldn't get out of that bad form. But when they were playing good football, Rog, they looked up there with anyone. Talking about up there, Rog, but not quite at the summit. Manchester City 2, Arsenal 2. I love this game of football. The final game of the Manuel Pellegrini era at the Etihad. Sergio Aguero put City ahead in the 8th minute with a blast from the top of the box, Rog. But just 2 minutes later, Arsenal drew level through the meaty French forehead of Olivier Giroud. Second half goals from Kevin and Alexis left the game knotted at 2.
Well, I'm sure when the Premier League scheduled this game, they were like, this is going to be the climax of the season.
Yeah.
Two title favourites going head to head. What did they know, David? I mean, there was the dark side of Leicester's emotional pyrotechnics. This game just felt, like pleather. It really did. Couple that with the fact that City had just damp squibbed out of the Champions League after marching all the way into the brave new world of the semi-final. They just seemed to roll over there without a whimper. Zinedine Zidane didn't even have to split his pants to beat them.
Yeah, I know, for once.
Yeah, and City didn't manage a shot on target in the 90 minutes in Spain, that after firing just one on frame in the home game. And so to Pellegrini's last disappointing home game at the Etihad. I mean, City started fast. They opened with a high line. They pressed hard against an all too easily rattled Arsenal. And it paid dividends almost immediately, within eight minutes.
Yeah, well, look, I enjoyed this game, Rog. And I actually wish both teams had played like this with this amount of heart and guts and desire all season. Neither of them were playing with that desire both at the same time. It was a little bit of a game of ebb and flow. But Manchester City certainly started hotter. Jesus Navas, he had a decent game, Rog. Put a decent ball in the 8th minute, knocked down by Fernandinho. Aguero finishes.
Yeah, Navas will be good for Sunderland next season.
Yeah, he could be.
I mean, it was a good game. They both tried hard. There was all kinds of athletic, impressive feats, but incredible miscalibration for both teams. There were just five shots on target the whole time. My favourite moment came right after the Kun Aguero goal. City had just shown that they meant business. They went right back down their own end. Cliché. Headed it past the flat-footed.
Almost scored a sensational own goal.
And I loved it. You know how Eskimos have 50 words for snow?
Yeah.
Joe Hart has 207 different facial contortions for
panic.
Don't panic. Yeah. I've got everything under complete control.
Yeah.
Oh, God, he uncorked all of them within a 3-second span as Clichy's ball just kind of plopped by him and just wide of the post. I think it's Hart's emotional range at feigning confidence that really sets him apart from the chasing pack and makes him England's number one. But it was from the ensuing corner that Arsenal found their way back into the game.
How
for the
many?
Most unpredictable place a goal came.
Giroud, Rog, what's it, 881 minutes without a goal?
It's felt longer.
Il est ressuscité, Rog. He rises up and heads it in from that meaty French forehead.
Rose up unmarked, like a salmon.
Yeah, why
a fantastic looking salmon. Leaping out of a stream after 881 impotent minutes. It was an occurrence rarer than a Bartolo Colon home run. And we joked on the show, bigger fairy tale than Leicester's entire season to watch. But it got dark for Arsenal for a moment. Welbeck out with a knee injury, which could see him out of the game for between 3 and 5 months. Yeah. Enter an old friend.
Jack Wilshere, Rog, he's back. Just in time for the Euros.
It's like a nostalgic trip back to the 2010s.
It is. I felt suddenly to talk about in the clubs.
I felt suddenly like I wanted to try and find a Von Dutch hat and some True Religion jeans.
Yeah.
He reintroduced himself to us with some flicks, some charging runs, a few full-blooded tackles bordering on the reckless. Jack's back!
Yeah.
And he gave the Arsenal midfield traction that the starting lineup had frankly lacked. Paging Roy Hodgson for late 2016 Euro inclusion.
Yeah.
De Bruyne.
De Bruyne.
A roller. Yeah. Lingering late season narrative. Peter Schick is not immortal.
It was a prototypical Kevin De Bruyne run down the left, splits the Man City defence. Hits it pretty well, but didn't look that well in order to go and beat Petr Cech. I think Petr Cech would like that one back.
But then enter the game changer. Mm. A shocking twist. Theo Walcott. Strolled on with his brittle confidence, replacing Iwobi, who looked very much like a 20-year-old rookie.
Yeah.
And Walcott instantly a sharper edge, although it was never clear whether he was going to do something whip smart or just turn the ball over. Truth is, I don't think he knows what he's going to do. And if he doesn't, then his opponents had no chance of knowing whatsoever.
Mm.
And suddenly Arsenal had the upper hand.
Yeah, I thought Theo Walcott was great. I'd like to see Theo Walcott in the England squad as a substitute. I think he's fantastic. He injects pace and he scares defenders. And he did that. And I must say, the way Arsenal played after going 2-1 down, that is the Arsenal that really wins my respect. I love it when they play like that. And I love the football they play when they play like that. Alexis came alive, Rog. He came alive. He looked like he actually wants to live in England. It was amazing what he was able to pull off. And that goal, Alexis knocks it into Giroud, who behaved like a centre-forward, laid it off, back to Alexis, bam, goal, 2-2.
So six defenders who couldn't close him down. That is the Manchester City team with Alphonse on company. Mm. A back line made of gold-plated dog turd.
Yeah.
And a crucial goal for Arsenal. Damaging blow for Manchester City. We've got to credit Arsenal for being well un-Arsenal-y, seeding the lead twice but gutting their way back into the game. And they now need just a point from their final game of the season to lock up third place.
And they could still catch Spurs for second place.
Yeah, looking back on this season, Arsenal fans are going to scratch their heads that their team scored twice at Manchester City, twice at United, three times at Liverpool and twice at Spurs and didn't take 3 points in any of those big games. But then possibly the saddest scene of the weekend, David. Pellegrini's choreographed farewell.
Yeah. It was choreographed, but not...
It's like the office party no one really wants to be at.
Oh, God. Do we have to do something for Pellegrini? Yeah, we better do it. Oh, God, I don't really want to arrange it. Okay. Well, why don't we just
we'll
have
get
him
cupcakes.
Come out?
We'll just get some
have
cupcakes.
Him come out after and have a couple of
Everyone
fans.
Likes cupcakes.
It's like shake his hand or something.
Oh, if you didn't see it, Man City had to do a farewell to their fans, walk around and applaud them. Mm. Pellegrini, they'd done a video, David. They'd obviously been looking at your pod notes. They did make a video.
Yeah.
And the only thing that it missed was, well, really the crowd. The City faithful had bled away long before the players wombled round sluggishly for the lap of honour.
Mm.
And he walked around clapping. It's actually impossible to tell as he walked around, Yaya Toure, whether he thought he was still playing at game pace. As he kind of strolled around.
I must say, Yaya in this game reached a new low in terms of energy
levels
level. New levels of Yaya-ness. I mean, it was amazing.
I think he was trying to rewrite the history on his City career. If you thought, I didn't give a crap in them games, just watch this one. For the empty stands, they just told their own story. This has been a season of disappointment. The top four place is now out of City's control. Part of me wonders, David, bear with me on this. If a cuckolded, I love that word, a cuckolded Manuel Pellegrini, he just scuttled the City ship intentionally in the name of revenge.
Yeah.
I mean, he suffered. Think about it. There's what Manuel Pellegrini publicly has suffered.
Yeah.
I can only think of Jennifer
Aniston. Do you really want my girlfriend? Yeah. Have you really taken a look?
Yeah, he's like, Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
It would be as if she actually had to keep living with Brad Pitt after he jettisoned her for Angelina, what Manuel Pellegrini's been to.
Uh-huh.
I mean, City were second when they announced Pep's arrival.
Yeah.
They're now desperately trying to grab hold, please God, please God, please God,
yeah,
to fourth. Kevin De Bruyne's injury.
De Bruyne.
No doubt unhinged their season. But they had 1.91 points per game before the Pep announcement. And they've slipped to 1.5. They won six of the 14 matches. They've lost five times in that period. And Pep is going to inherit an incredibly expensive squad without imagination that needs an overhaul from back to front. He may not be in the Champions League, which would make Pep, his arrival at Manchester, it seemed almost like a humanitarian mission, David.
Yeah. I must say, one of the challenging things about Premier League football for new managers coming in who haven't managed in it before is the speed of the game. You look at how much speed there is across those Premier League teams right now. There are very few central defenders, and Man City has a massive gap in central defence. There are very few central defenders available in the world who can play and defend at that kind of speed in the Premier League. And it's hard to think where they're going to find those players.
I know Pep listens to the pod.
Yeah, he loves the pod.
John Stones, 50 million.
Yeah, I know.
Definitely.
I think his value might have gone down a little.
60 million,
Rob,
definitely.
Since he turned down Chelsea, it might have gone down a little. But Pennington, we'll see. Okay, Rog, Norwich, 0. Man United 1. Don't know how that happened. In what could have easily been confused for a meaningless mid-table tilt, United crept closer to the top four, defeating hapless Norwich. That's an insult to the word hapless. Behind a 72nd minute goal from Juan Mata. At the time of recording, United sit 2 points behind City. With a game in hand, they play at West Ham as we are speaking.
Oh, must win game for both sides. Norwich to stay up. United to keep their hopes of Champions League football flickering. You would think it would be an unbelievable game of football.
No, it wasn't.
You'd think wrong. Oh, for United, Martial, injured in warm-ups, tactical genius LVG, went strikerless.
Yeah, he rested Rashford.
Yeah, Herrera was in, and he filled in a lineup without a player who'd scored a goal in the last 12 games. And it showed, it should be said, LVG, he looks splendiferous in his sunglasses, David.
Yeah.
Not like Mr. Blonde from Reservoir Dogs, but a little bit more sadistic.
Yeah, it's one of those guys, I've never seen him flick his hair like that, where he sort of flicks back his hair, ever. But the second he puts on sunglasses, he started doing that with his hair.
Feel himself.
Somebody told him, you look really good in those sunglasses, Louis. And he just like started getting the feels.
Even though he was looking at his team through some rose-tinted glasses, they were still crap.
Yeah.
And it was Norwich that came out gangbusters, moving forward with all their frenetic desire. Yeah.
Meaning they had one shot on
goal. None of the talent. You know, Norwich remind me of one of those contestants in a reality pop show that kind of auditioned.
Uh-huh.
With a really emotional backstory.
Yeah.
Like a family tragedy.
Yeah.
Lots of family tragedy, serious illnesses.
Yeah, the producers really want them to be good.
Yes, yeah.
They want them to be really good.
And as a viewer, you just feel incredible pity for them. You want them to, you want to root for them.
Yeah.
But then they open their mouth, David.
And they wear a terrible outfit.
They start singing.
They're wearing yellow and green.
They have no tonal range.
Yeah.
And even Blake Shelton, he won't take pity on them.
Yeah.
They're what even Larry Wilmore would refer to as the M-word. They're that bad, David. They lack belief. They lack hope. And Manchester United lacked any sense that they actually cared about playing football. They were so insipid, David. I started to miss the sight of Fellaini. Lolloping around, elbowing people in the name of justice across the midfield. It was dour, David.
Their one goal, Rog, came from a sort of a moment of quality, but a moment of quality that came out of desperation. Rooney ran into the area on a dead end, but
a dead end, but he would have scored himself by acres seasons ago. But here it became a dead end.
But he's still a smart footballer, Rog, a smarter footballer than he is human. And he just picks out Juan Mata, rolls the ball right into Juan Mata's instep. Goal for the little penguin, Rog.
Oh, the man who passes the sentence should swing the sword. Cue all too familiar sad images at Carrow Road. Feel for young manager Alex Neil, who didn't have a lot to work with, having been promoted. So it's almost certainly farewell, a sad goodbye, beautifully captured by Jonathan Liu in The Telegraph. He said, Norwich are a club who often have trouble believing to be a Norwich fan is to suffer. Not perhaps the intense extinction level suffering of a Portsmouth or Wimbledon, but a low level dread, the paralysing fear that everything you have accumulated is going to be taken away. As for LVG, what happens next? No one knows. And by no one, I mean Jose Mourinho's agent. I can tell you, when I was home in England, I met LVG's former landlord.
Really?
Yeah, his lease has just ended.
Yeah.
And Manchester United fans, you will be happy. I hope as happy as I am, I hope, to know that LVG has just signed a new 3-year lease in Manchester. Please let him stay.
In other nether region action, Rog, Sunderland 3-2. And when I talk about nether regions, I'm talking about Chelsea. The poster boy for meditation, Big Sam, Rog, sees his side earn a win that could very well keep them in the top flight. Down 2-1 at the half, the Black Cats storm back thanks to goals from Fabio Barini and Jermaine Defoe. Sunderland move out of the drop zone. They could ensure safety Wednesday night when they play your beloved Everton, Rog.
Oh, my favourite story of the season.
Yeah.
That Sunderland boss Sam Allardyce revealed he uses transcendental meditation.
Yeah.
To keep calm during the relegation scrap. Yes.
Or somebody's told him that eating pies is called transcendental meditation.
No, he said he shuts himself in his office for 20 minutes a day.
Yeah.
And repeats the mantra, a personal mantra, he said,
in
his mind. The article then said, Allardyce didn't go as far as revealing his stress-busting mantra. That's for fans to guess. I would pay money, David, to watch that Zen mastery at work.
Yeah.
Just imagine like a bullfrog sitting behind a desk and just humming the word. Pies.
Yeah.
Pies.
He's good.
I'm starting to tingle.
See, what he's got at Sunderland.
Strangely aroused.
That Alex Neil does not have at Norwich. Is he has athletic footballers. He has footballers capable of excitement, Rog, of exciting the fans, and they did that. Chelsea didn't play this badly in this game. I mean, putting that in context for how Chelsea have played all season. They go ahead, a very well-taken goal by Diego Costa. But Sunderland respond.
On the chin.
Wabi Kasri.
Two Wabis, Kasri.
Wabi, the third Wabi. What a goal, Rog. What a goal. What a strike.
Yeah, the ball was just bouncing around the area. There was a lot of head tennis going on.
Yeah.
It's as if Wabi Kasri screamed, enough with this head tennis crap, lads. Yeah. And he just put his foot through the ball.
Yeah, no, fantastic goal.
It was a goal that was even better than the taco bowls made in the Trump Tower Grill.
Yeah.
Not quite that good, actually.
He loves Mexicans.
And then Matic scored.
Yeah.
But again, Sunderland
and scored in our Judge Ivor Bennett time. Rog Matic not looking that happy, could say, after scoring the goal.
But where there is Jermaine Defoe, there is hope.
Oh, there is hope.
On-rolled Super Ginge, Duncan Watmore.
Yeah.
Chelsea instantly looked stretched.
Yeah.
Barini knit one home off a John Terry deflection, which I believe should count double.
Yeah, Van Aanholt crossed, the former Chelsea boys condemning their former team, Rog. And then Defoe, what a Premier League striker he is. Not good enough to make it an MLS, Rog.
Yeah, but what a first touch. You must have learned that in Toronto. Sunderland, what is dead may never die. And they looked, having scored three, that they were suddenly using up some of their meagre allotment of next season's goals in this one game, Dave. For the second consecutive week, Chelsea control the fate of those at either end of the table.
Yeah.
At Mott Ryan
title
tweeted,
deciders.
Odd feeling, Chelsea becoming neutral's heroes. They sign Miazga, they win the league for Leicester City, and then they help keep Sunderland up. They're the good guys.
They are the good guys, the unintentional good guys.
Yeah, and a good guy feeling that was really wrapped up in the 95th minute with a second yellow for John Terry.
Yeah, second yellow for John Terry, Rog. And I'm sure many neutrals and many John Terry haters rejoice. I look at it and I see, how many more Premier League footballers are we going to see like John Terry? He's been involved with that club for 21 years, Rog. More than 700 appearances, holds the record for most goals scored by a Premier League defender. Been an amazing servant to that team. Whatever you think about him, whatever you think about everything else, as a footballer, he's given his all for Chelsea. And I'm going to miss him, Rog. Come on, take the counter. Take the counter, Rog.
I mean, he's such a well-talked-about player. I don't think it needs a counter other than for me to say, Google him. And there's no doubt, Dave, I'd agree with you. John Terry loves Chelsea. He won't play again for them this season. So he's gone and rented Stamford Bridge on the Monday after the season ends. He's going to have a private game there one last time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he reportedly is going to have a barbecue.
Yeah, he loves
on the
a barbecue.
Field. Something so sweet and endearing about it. It's like Vlad the Impaler renting something he used to impale his victims on one last time for sentimentality's sake. I love it.
Yeah.
I fought, I lost, and now I rest.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Game of Thrones. Sunderland. At Brian B. Coggs tweeted, "The corpse of Sunderland just opened its eyes and gasped. They need one win against hopelessnesses Everton midweek or Watford to stay up and doom Newcastle to relegation."
Yeah, and I just say, read the stories about most teams' top players, Rod. Really go back behind the headlines and find out all about them. The difference between John Terry and those players from a morality point of view is not massive. The difference between them as a footballer is vast. Okay, Rod, Villa, 0. Newcastle, 0. A game every championship manager will use in scouting these squads during the off-season. Newcastle saw a series of second-half chances go begging against already relegated Villa. The Toon could be relegated before they play their next game.
Less a game of football.
I don't understand Newcastle, Roger. Don't understand them.
Less a game of football, more a movie trailer for next season's relegation battle in the championship. Because this was just a dire game of football. It's memorable from a Villa fan's perspective for the 74th minute protest in which fans dispatched inflatable objects, beach balls, crocodiles, and yes, predictably, this being English football, blow-up dolls onto the field to show their contempt for the way the club has been run. But Newcastle, what don't you understand about Newcastle?
I don't understand. I understand why Villa are going down, Rog. I understand why Norwich are going down. I don't understand how this Newcastle team, with so many good players, really so many good players, I don't know why they are the team that look likely to join them. I don't know why they couldn't get it up to go and beat Villa. Yeah, I just don't understand
it.
I
mean, it is strange on the day when Sunderland smacked 3 past Chelsea to be unable to score against Villa. And the thing you have to ask yourself is, it's so Newcastle to raise your fans' hopes, create a sense of confidence, and then just to waltz into Villa and just play so impotently. But the thing about Newcastle is just how poor the management is at the senior levels. And probably most heart-wrenching of all for the fans of Newcastle, who are deeply passionate and long-suffering, if Steve McClaren had been sacked early on when it was clear that he had no idea what he was doing with the direction of the club, and Rafa Benitez was brought in with a little more time to assert order out of chaos, Newcastle wouldn't be in this position of doom and darkness.
Okay, Liverpool 2, Watford 0. Goals from Joe Allen and Roberto Firmino. See Jurgen Klopp's side past the Hornets at Anfield. A ground still abuzz from last week's emotional Europa League semi-final victory against Villarreal.
Liverpool's B team, enough to win this one. Young 11. Jurgen Klopp made 8 changes after the heroic European Cup semi-final win in midweek. 22-year-old midfielder Kevin Stewart looked fantastic, and the substitute appearance by 19-year-old Cameron Brannigan was wonderful to behold. Well, not as beautiful as Joe Allen's hair, which gets ever more continental by the week.
Hair.
Fantastic opening goal for that gentleman. Watford had chances, seemed disinterested in taking them. Second half of their season, with relegation fended off, a damp squib, which should see off once flavour of the month. Kike Sanchez-Flores, his style, will be missed. We should talk about that Europa League semi-final, though, David.
Wouldn't Damp Squid be a good name for a restaurant, by the way? Got to remember that one.
Be a great name for an old country band.
Yeah, Europa League.
The Mediterranean.
The Europa League is back, Rod. The Europa League is hot again. It only needed one of England's big teams with piles of history to be contending to win the Europa League for suddenly it to be like a competition worth winning or making it into.
Yep, Liverpool's everything will now be the Europa final against Seville a week on Wednesday. They don't really muck around with the Europa League. Game, semi-final, boom.
Yeah,
it's not
bam,
a big,
bam, 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 bam.
But the final qualification was the product of another fantastic Anfield European night. Oh, as they pressed the life and hope out of Villarreal 3-0 to cap a raw, emotional 2 weeks in Liverpool after the Hillsborough judgment. Villarreal were doomed before kickoff. That wall of noise produced by the fans pre-game, the you'll never walk alone, just seemed to bleed the confidence out the Spanish side, which is exactly what Jurgen Klopp wants, Dave. Unity between the players, the history, the fans, and him. Always him as the conductor, the raptures. Rafa Honigstein, he explained it's called Gesamtkunstwerk, yep. The ideal of a work of art which works, combining every aesthetic level. And this was a night of just Gesamtkunstwerk magic.
Yeah.
And in what might just be Klopp's greatest career achievement yet, he even coaxed a smile out of Daniel Sturridge.
Wow.
While substituting.
Wow.
I am still full of adrenaline after my interview with him, which ran on NBCSN on Tuesday night, but is now available on NBCSports.com. It's an hour-long documentary. It's called Inside the Mind of Jurgen Klopp.
It might be because Sturridge knows he's going to Arsenal next season. Okay, West Ham 1, Swansea 4. The last weekend fixture at Upton Park sees Swansea deliver a blow to the Irons' European aspirations.
112 years, the place they called home, Upton Park, the Bulling Ground. Fine football stadium of the old school variety.
Very old school variety.
Few of them left now. Goodison Park, the best example. Those kind of grounds which smell as football stadiums should, Davo.
Yeah.
Of police horse manure, body odour, spilt lager, French fries and fear.
Yeah, fear. Yeah, whatever minority you belong to, fear. Rog, it's a beautiful ground to watch football in, full of atmosphere. One of the first matches I ever went to as a young boy, saw West Ham play Coventry. There stood at one of the ends, terrified for my life at about age 5 or 6. But it will be missed, Rog. It will be missed. The Olympic Stadium, Rog, they've already sold more than 50,000 season tickets.
52,000, second highest number of season tickets sold in the country already. Yeah. And I'd say about the Bulling Ground, I went when I was in Moscow to the KGB headquarters.
Yeah.
And you stand there.
As you do.
And you just think, my God, so much blood has been spilt on these cobblestones.
Yeah.
And you kind of feel the same when you used to go into Upton Park.
Very true. But perhaps just a little more.
It's a controversial move moving from the old 35,000-seater to the 60,000 Olympic Stadium, courtesy in large part of the British taxpayer.
Yeah.
They're lucky, though, Davo, to be moving in with this Slaven Bilic team. I mean, he was considered a gamble when he arrived, and Payet as the face of this team. What a stroke of luck alongside Lanzini that he's made West Ham look like a resurgent threat. I mean, it's so much more exciting to move on the back of this season than the last one when they were Sam Allardyce's grinders.
I think it's going to be great for them. That Olympic Stadium, Rog, the connections to it by rail are so good. You can get there from anywhere from central London. You can get there from Essex. You can get there from Kent. They're going to pull in a lot of fans up there to go and watch football.
It will transform the club. You'll never have a more convenient way, thanks to the transport system, to have your teeth kicked in.
Yeah, without a doubt. Talking about getting your teeth kicked in, Rog, we go to South London. Crystal Palace 2, Stoke 1. Palace seal Premier League safety. Safety, thanks to 2 Dwight Gale goals. All focus can now shift to May 21st's FA Cup final against Man United. Bournemouth 1, West Brom 1, Salomon Rondon and Matt Ritchie goals, as well as an absurd Artur Boric penalty save, sees the final game of the season at the Vitality Stadium end in a draw. Well done, Bournemouth, Rog. Well done, Bournemouth. And in the Championship, Middlesbrough joined Burnley in earning promotion to the Premier League this weekend. Robbie Musto's former side drew 1-1 with Brighton and Hove Albion Saturday to clinch second place, Rog.
In a game that was meant to be worth $230 million. Up come Middlesbrough. Yeah. The North Easterners, a yo-yo club who've been in the Premier League for 14 seasons, but not since 2009. You in America will remember the city as a setting for much of Billy Elliot. It's a city that's probably best understood by its decision to twin itself with Dunkirk, France. Their only real title came in 2012 when Middlesbrough was voted the worst place to live in the United Kingdom.
Okay, Rog, the aforementioned Brighton and Hove Albion end up third and must rely on the Championship playoffs for promotion. The Seagulls play sixth place Sheffield Wednesday in one semi-final. The other semi-final pits Steve Bruce's Hull City against Derby County, the Rams. The 2 leg ties take place beginning this weekend. The winners meet at Wembley Saturday, May 28th in football's richest game. To the victor goes a spot in the Premier League and all of the television money that accompanies it. As any fan of the Championship will know, those games are on beIN Sports.
Oh,
sorry, KW.
God, make it Steve Bruce. Please, God, make it Steve Bruce.
That would
Bruce.
Be amazing.
Please, God.
It would be amazing. Rog, in MLS. It's a big weekend for the old gods and the new. Jordan Morris scored in his fourth straight game Saturday to help Seattle defeat San Jose 2-0. And a Robbie Keane brace and a phenomenal Stevie G goal lead the Galaxy over New England 4-2 Sunday in SoCal. Even NYCFC won, Rog.
Stevie G said after the game, "I don't want to start any unnecessary rumours. I'm really happy where I am at the moment. But sooner rather than later, I will return to where I'm comfortable with my people. An amazing thing to say. And that's Liverpool. And they asked him why. And he said, this is just fantastic. He said, I miss my friends and my family. I miss a bit of cold weather. I miss the cold weather. Who's moved to California and said that?
No,
is that
one.
Possibly the
no
most one English
ever.
Statement of all time, David?
No one ever. It's the sort of thing you might say, Rog. But no one has ever said that.
That was fantastic. Love it. Well done, Stevie G. In other news, Stoke City have announced a strategic partnership with Orlando City.
Yeah.
Two clubs who've got a great relationship, largely a result of owner Phil Rawlins' previous role as a director at Stoke. Mm. They'll liaise in terms of player recruitment, player development, fan engagement and commercial aspects.
Yeah.
I am praying
and
that
discounted theme park tickets.
I'm just praying that it means that Charlie Adam will be wearing the purple and lining up alongside Breck Shea.
It would be slimming to go and play in Orlando in that humidity, Rod.
Ed 2003 WRX wanted to know, I need a ruling. As an Orlando City diehard, am I now required to become a Potter?
No, they're just liaising. Perhaps you're required to liaise a little. You don't have to be a fan.
But it is a liaison dangereux.
Liaise. That's my least favourite verb in the English language.
I think it depends how much you like the taste of your own blood in your mouth, to be honest. I'd give it a couple of years to see if it's serious. It might be. It might not be.
Yeah.
It's hard to root against family, though, if it is serious. If the partnership is, you can be grandfathered in with another club if you love one already. But if you've not got one soon, I think even weird English second cousins once removed have to be respected.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Rog, this week's winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week receives more than a patch. We actually did an interview with him.
Yes.
Over to you, Rog.
Oh, one of the most fascinating and cryptic Ravens of all time from a GFOP, Simon Hallett, who just emailed us an email that said this. I've just bought into the ownership of an English football team, League Two's Plymouth Argyle. This, air quote, investment was inspired by your interviews with Messrs. Mostyn, Parrish and Hearn, not to mention Hurst Seifert of the Bundesliga. Then he tries to pitch for his team. Note Argyle are known as the Pilgrims. They wear the Mayflower on their chest. Can they be America's team? Simon Hallett.
Wow.
I got that, Davo, and I thought, who is this madman? And I know a lot of you are immersed in League Two football, so I'm telling you something that you already know. But Plymouth Argyle, they're in the League Two playoffs, Davo. And this week they face their arch rivals Portsmouth in a two-legged semi-final. So ahead of the games, for which he's travelled from Pennsylvania to Plymouth, I invited Simon to come in to the pod and tell us more. My guest today is a remarkable GFOP, a Pennsylvania-based listener and corporate investment officer who, after listening to our crap, was then moved to invest a reported six-figure sum in League Two side, playoff-bound Plymouth Argyle, the Pilgrims, the team he supported as a kid when he went to school in beautiful Plymouth, Devon. Well, we've got an open-door policy to all League Two directors here at Men in Blazers, and we have for some time. This gentleman is of particular interest to us, so we welcome to the pod, joining us in person in the crap part of Soho, direct from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, the Jerry Jones of League Two, Mr. Simon Hallett.
Good morning, Roger. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, Simon, I am so happy to speak to you at this remarkable time for you and the team that you've invested in. Plymouth, a nautical town on England's south coast. The Mayflower set sail from there in 1620. Sir Francis Drake, possibly its most famous son, he's a Plymouthian, a Janna. He's meant to be quite a good winger in his day. Plymouth Argyle, the Green Army. They're known in the modern period really for two things. Number one, financial woes. The team almost went bankrupt and disappeared in 2011 after 124 years of motley yet proud existence. It was run aground by investors who really saw it as a real estate play. It's also, number two, the largest city in England never to have played the game in the top flight. You've invested your money well, Simon.
Thank you.
You were raised in Plymouth. You went to school there. You've made your fortune in America. Home of the NFL, the NBA, MLB, MLS. Plenty of great franchises to sink your money into for minority ownership. What made you think it was a good idea to dump a reported six-figure sum in a League Two English football club.
Pure emotion. You use the word investment, and investment assumes that you're going to get a return. All the returns I'm going to get here are going to be psychic.
Those are the investments I like the most, Simon.
I moved to Plymouth shortly before the World Cup in 1966. Saw my first live football game in September 1966 at Home Park.
But when we first spoke, you talked about hearing Barry Hearn.
Yes.
Talking about owning a football team is like having a mistress.
Yes.
Most of my life I live vicariously through Barry Hearn, Simon.
Yeah.
But Plymouth, you look at Bournemouth's story, you heard Jeff Mostyn, and you thought, why not us?
Yes.
And you listen to Christian Seifert talk about the role of the community on this podcast and how Bundesliga clubs are embedded within the local towns. And you decided, based on those gents and your emotional connect, that the time was right for you to step into the breach. Is that true?
Absolutely true. I've listened twice to all of those. I love Barry Hearn for the same reason that you do, this mixture of business sense, old-fashioned thuggery, and love for football. I think he was very clear that all the money he made seemed to get reinvested in the club. I liked his approach. It kind of proved to me that it can be done in a mixture of community-mindedness and hard-headed business sense. I know that Barry describes himself as a hard-headed businessman, leave your wallet in the car park. But it was really Jeff Mostyn and Steve Parrish. I love Steve Parrish's first comment. The first thing he said in the podcast was that he went into the club and decided they needed a culture of excellence. And that will actually be one of the first things that we'll talk about when I have my first board meeting at Plymouth.
What is the five-year plan, Simon?
Five-year plan is to be in the Championship and established in the Championship, which we think we can do if we get slightly better attendances, get the revenues up, and get slightly more engagement, I'd say, with the community. And I haven't really talked about the Green Army. We have an extraordinary band of travelling fans. So on a kind of cold Tuesday night in the East End of London for a game against Leighton Orient, Argyle fans were between 20 and 25% of the crowd, which is remarkable. So the Green Army is an extraordinary nugget on which to build community engagement. So I think our goal has to be establishment in the Championship with secure revenue base.
When one invests in a football team, do you ask your wife before or after you make the deal? I'm asking for a friend. Is this a us conversation, we're investing, or is it a I just invested?
My wife would say it's I just invested. I would say I'm thinking very strongly about investing. Actually, I think I said, I'm thinking about investing in Plymouth. What do you think? And she said, that's ridiculous. And I said, well, actually, I've done a bit more than thinking.
There's a thin line between thinking and doing, dear.
It's a very thin line. But I have to say, she's come around to it. She's actually reading Secret Footballer. She likes to describe herself as a wag. She's been going, for instance, suntans, getting tattoos and all that kind of thing.
It's a whole new identity.
It's a whole new identity for my wife.
You told her after the fact?
No, before.
Because I do think if I were to step forward and buy a club, I'd probably position it as I'm thinking about our legacy, our family's legacy. It's a legacy investment. How can Americans follow along with your story, with your team? How can they connect emotionally to the travails, the odyssey of Plymouth Argyle in the playoffs? How can they help?
Well, they can help by kind of recognising that Plymouth Argyle, not Leicester City, not Manchester United, not Manchester City, not Chelsea, Plymouth Argyle really should be America's team. And really, they should be America's first team. Their nickname is the Pilgrims. The reason is that the Pilgrims set sail from Plymouth from what's still called the Mayflower Steps in 1620 for the New World. So Argyle are known as the Pilgrims. They wear the Mayflower on their shirts proudly. We chant, we are the Pilgrims, on the terraces at the Devonport end. And the links between the town and this country are extraordinary.
We've got to do some kind of sponsorship deal. I want to sponsor Reuben Reid next season.
You can sponsor the whole team for a modest sum. Please see my lawyer immediately afterwards. We'd be proud to have men in blazers on our shirts.
I think you should conquer America one step at a time. If you can just conquer Plymouth, Massachusetts, you could probably double the catchment area.
If you can put me in touch with John Henry.
You know what? I'm inspired by your story. I am going to start playing Plymouth Argyle on FIFA.
You should look at a guy called Greg Wild, who's got a speed rating of 90 or 91.
And I'm going to get him in my foot team.
He's in my foot team. You can reach me on FIFA at New Hope 233. My team, of course, is New Hope Argyle.
Thousands of Americans are now going to challenge you. Probably wallop you, and you'll love every second.
I'm up for it. I challenge very strongly in Division 10 of FUT.
I'd just say, when I was a kid, I always dreamt of being a player. But a great friend, our mutual friend Steve Parrish, Crystal Palace owner, when I first met him, he said his childhood dream was always to be the owner. I know that was your childhood dream as well. Can you put into words, how does it feel to have achieved that?
It's really just that sense of involvement with something that you previously used to watch. You were a spectator, and now I feel I'm a participant. And that's a big difference.
What a story. What a man. A man of action. We wish you, Simon, and everyone at Plymouth Argyle, especially the Green Army, courage for the playoffs. Gird your loins, pilgrims. Simon Hallett, courage. What a madman.
Yeah.
What an adventure. He said to me as he left, his last words as he got into the elevator, he said, I used to watch Plymouth as a kid with a couple of hundred people, and now I'm two games away from watching them in the director's box at Wembley. Life.
Wow.
We're rooting for you, Simon. Good luck to you and your pilgrims.
As you mentioned, Rog, Plymouth Argyle travel to Portsmouth for the first leg of the League Two playoffs Thursday. The return leg at Plymouth Argyle is Sunday. Neither game is on TV here in the US. What a shock. But for those listeners in Eastern Europe, it is on Sport Club 3, Serbia. Rog. Okay, your weekend.
It's on what?
It's on Sport Club 3 with a K, Sport Club, because it's that kind of a club. Sport Club 3. At night, it turns into a discotheque. But during the day, Sport Club 3, Serbia. Okay, Rog, your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. Every Premier League game on this, the final weekend of the season, is spread across all of the networks of NBC Universal.
Just plastered, Rog, everywhere.
Yeah, I know, every network. They kick
you
off.
You love it.
I love it because they always select the right teams and games to go on the right network.
Who's going to go on the Science Channel?
Yeah, who goes on Sci-Fi? Let's get West Ham.
I bet you this is the day Brendan Rodgers is most annoyed as he sits at home and smoulders because he was always on Bravo.
He loves Bravo because he was so good looking. all these games kick off Sunday morning at 10 a.m.
And we're going to watch it together in New York City somewhere.
Yeah, with Samsung. Stay tuned to our social media to find out more about that
Samsung
event.
Is our favourite Sam in football.
Yeah.
After Sam Allardyce.
Yeah, exactly. Number two. Okay, in MLS, both of these games are on Sunday. Sporting KC versus Orlando City at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. And the Portland Timbers host NYCFC at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox Sports 1. It is a big game. Okay, Rog, time is running out to vote in our Goal of the Season competition. The Men in Blazers small council. Rog, selected 10 nominees. You can see all of the goals and vote on meninblazers.com. Same Wabi Kazri's goal, Rog, happened too late to make it.
I am shocked by who is winning.
Oh, really?
I'm shocked more by who's not winning.
Huh, interesting. We will announce the winner on the season finale of the Men in Blazers show this coming Monday, May 16th.
Which is an hour-long show.
Yeah.
It's going to involve several Robbies and a Kyle.
Who's replacing me for the second half hour? You know, I can't concentrate beyond 30 minutes, Rog.
Several
I can barely
Robbies
make it through five.
And a Kyle.
Okay, we'll see. Maybe we can get a third Wabi. Get Wabi Kazri in.
Several Robbies and a Kyle.
Okay, Rog, there are many other ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium. Helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage, allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you going to put in the Amazon Emporium this week, Roger?
A book.
Oh.
The Sudden Arrival of Violence by Malcolm McKay.
Mm-hmm.
Third in a psychologically taught series called the Glasgow Trilogy, which follows the lonely rise of a young gunman in the grim Glasgow gang underworld. The series pioneered a style known as tartan noir. I've got to admit, because of that, I read the whole thing in my head in a Stevie Naismith accent. Staccato in style. It is gritty. Oh, it's a fantastic piece of work from which, I've got to be honest, I learned as much about the art of negotiation as I did about the doings of the Scottish underworld. If you love noir, this whole series, all three of them, magical read.
Oh, I love the Scottish underworld, Rog.
Tartan noir.
Tartan noir. Okay, Rog, guess what I'm putting in the Amazon Emporium? I'll give you a clue. It's grilling season. Yes, Rod, the CDN IRM 200 Glow Pro Accurate Meat / Poultry Oven Proof or Barbecue Proof Thermometer. It's NSF certified. I don't know what that means, Rod. For just $10.95. I got to tell you, the problem with grilling, you're often grilling in the dark, Rog, because you grill of an evening, and until the days get really long, often it's dark outside. You grill in the dark.
Problem.
What do you need?
Solution.
It's a problem. Solution. You need a thermometer. I don't like digital thermometers, Rog. It's very tough to read those screens amongst all the smirk. I like an analog dial on a thermometer. This one, Rod, the CDN IRM 200 Glow Pro Accurate Meat Poultry Oven Proof Thermometer NSF Certified. It glows in the dark, Rog, so you can actually see it. You may have to memorise all the numbers if your eyesight's as bad as mine, but you can see it. It's got beef settings, it's got lamb settings, pork, ham, ground beef, veal, Rog, anything you want to grill, you just plug in this. It's fantastic. A bargain at $10.95. I own no piece of this company, Rog. There's nothing in it for me other than to provide
other than
a
your happiness
for GFOPs. Oh, what a thermometer that is. It makes me just want to go and grill in the dark right now, Rog. This just in, Rog. The Man United West Ham game, the final game at Upton Park, Rog. The family atmosphere, the players walking on with their babies, with their young children.
Nostalgia.
Nostalgia. Come and celebrate at the Berlin ground. Delayed, Rog, for over 30 minutes because
West Ham fans decided to attack the Manchester United bus.
Yeah, well, that's nostalgia.
We're all one big family here at Upton Park.
Yeah, we attacked the bus together. Three generations of the same family throwing missiles at the Man United bus.
Oh, we're come all on, make room for Granny.
So
fantastic.
Good,
go out the way you lived. Stay true to yourself, West Ham fans. Yeah. I think it's fantastic.
Blood on the cobbles. Okay, Rog, there are many other ways to connect to us. You can now watch entire episodes of our crap TV show on NBC Sports Live Extra, Apple TV and Roku. It's also up on our website, meninblazers.com.
We had the F2 freestylers.
Oh, the boys.
They were just like
us. F2 boys.
They're English and they're a duo.
Yeah.
Only slight difference being they're actually talented and they have hair.
A lot of hair, Rog.
A lot of talent too. Amazing.
Oh, amazing stuff. Also on meninblazers.com. A place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner, Guinness. You can follow us on Twitter, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett. Oh, it's really helpful. They're now all written out. On Instagram, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy _ Davies. On Facebook, that's Men in Blazers is our Facebook. And you can always send your Ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War Pig!
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Exposure.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
LTD, LTN.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America.
Oh, just one more weekend to go, Roger.
Vincado. Na, 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 na.